So imagine for a second, right, that you just inked this massive ironclad contract. Like, we are talking $10 billion over 6 years. You've basically secured all the cloud computing power you need to run your entire global empire.
Right, so you're feeling pretty bulletproof at that point.
Exactly. You are set. And then just a few months later, your provider calls you up and says, yeah, about that contract, we're actually going to have to pull the plug on your most critical services.
Wow. Just out of nowhere.
Right, because they simply ran out of juice. I mean, you would be scrambling. It sounds like this hypothetical, I don't know, doomsday scenario, but that is literally what happened between two of the most powerful tech giants on the planet, Google and Meta.
Yeah, and it's the kind of corporate nightmare that normally gets buried under like layers of non-disclosure
Oh,
agreements.
sure.
But this one was just too massive to hide. It completely spilled out into the open, and it really exposed a much darker, much larger structural failure that was happening across the entire tech landscape.
And that failure is exactly the focus of today's deep dive. We are tearing into the 2026 Great Compute Crisis.
A big one.
It really is. I've got a stack of notes right here, heavily anchored by this fantastic comprehensive analysis piece by Tekin. It's titled The Great Compute Crisis: Meta, Google, and Muse Spark.
Really great piece. It lays it all out so clearly.
Yeah. So our mission for this deep dive is to basically get to the bottom of why the booming AI industry suddenly smashed into this brick wall of physical hardware limitations. We want to look at how that sparked a multi-billion dollar feud and, what companies are actually doing to survive in a world where compute is suddenly this finite resource. So I'm really glad to have our resident expert here today to help make sense of all this
Well,
madness.
I am so glad to be diving into this with you.
Yeah.
Because we really are looking at a historical inflection point here.
Right.
I mean, for decades, the digital world operated on this assumption of infinite scalability. You could just
Yeah.
spin up another server,
Yeah, it's
right?
always just in the cloud.
Yeah, exactly. But this crisis is the moment where the digital world violently collided with the physical world. And, well, the physics won.
The physics always wins. So let's start with the triggering event that dragged this entire crisis onto the front pages. According to the breakdown in the Tekin piece, this happened in March 2026.
Right.
Google formally notified Meta that they could not fulfill the requested capacity for their Gemini AI model. And remember, Meta had signed that $10 billion Google Cloud contract back in August 2025.
Which is wild.
It is. They were a massive paying customer.
And you have to remember, cloud computing is entirely predicated on this illusion that
Right.
there is always more room on the server.
You pay more money, you get more bandwidth.
Exactly. So to have Google, a company whose very identity is tied to endless data centers, to have them tell a client the size of Meta that they have to actually ration compute power, I
Yeah.
mean, that's the equivalent of the ocean running out of water. It signaled that the underlying infrastructure was just breaking down.
Okay, let's unpack this because a massive contradiction immediately jumps out at me here. Meta is arguably the king of open source AI.
Oh, absolutely.
They have Llama. They spent billions developing Llama and basically giving it away to the world. So why on earth were they so heavily reliant on paying Google for Gemini in the first place?
That's a great question.
Like, if you have your own world-class AI, you use it, right?
You would think so.
Yeah.
But it really reveals this quiet, kind of uncomfortable truth about the AI industry at that specific moment in time.
Which was what?
Well, open source models like Llama were incredible for research, for building an ecosystem, and,
Yeah.
for general developer use,
Yeah.
but they lacked the maturity and the sheer bulletproof reliability required for grueling, heavy-duty, industrial-scale tasks.
Ah, I see.
When you operate at metascale, a model that hallucinates even 0.1% of the time, that is a massive catastrophe.
Right, because we were talking about the core plumbing of their ecosystem here. The source actually outlines three main pillars that Meta was relying on Gemini for. First was content moderation across Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp, like scanning millions of posts, images, and videos every single day just to pull down harmful content.
Which requires immense processing power.
Exactly. Second was fraud detection, identifying phishing scams and fake accounts in real time, 24/7.
Right. And the third pillar is internal developer tools.
Yeah, tell me about that one.
So you have thousands of Meta engineers relying on AI for coding assistance, debugging, process automation, things like that.
Okay.
And for those really mission-critical, deeply integrated tasks, Gemini just performed better and faster than Llama at the time.
So they just bought the better tool.
Exactly. Meta essentially swallowed their pride and leased a competitor's engine because their own open source engine just wasn't quite robust enough to pull that kind of freight train yet.
That makes sense. But man, the internal shockwaves at Meta when Google actually capped that access, they were staggering.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Just looking at the numbers from the Tech and Analysis, Meta employee access to Gemini dropped from 100% down to 35%, literally overnight.
Wow.
Yeah. 65,000 people suddenly cut down to 22,000. Daily queries crashed from 5 million to 1.2 million. And they slapped a hard cap on their engineers, limiting them to 10,000 queries a month.
Which completely strangled their internal productivity.
I mean, I have to push back on that a little bit, though.
Well,
10,000 queries a month sounds like a massive allowance for one person. Like, I don't ask AI 10,000 questions a month. Why was that specific cap such a huge bottleneck for a software engineer?
Okay, yeah, that's a fair point. But you have to realize, an engineer isn't just, like, typing questions into a chat box the way you or I might.
Okay.
They are running automated testing agents. They're compiling code where a single AI agent might make 50 background API calls in 3 seconds.
Oh, wow. Just in the background.
Exactly. It's constantly checking for errors, formatting the syntax, cross-referencing documentation. When you automate workflows like that, an engineer can burn through 10,000 queries in a matter of days.
Jeez.
So hitting that wall meant that elite, highly paid engineers were literally sitting on their hands just waiting for their monthly digital allowance to reset.
Okay, that makes total sense. You aren't just typing. You have fleets of bots talking to each other.
Exactly.
So obviously, Mark Zuckerberg doesn't just sit there and accept these rations. He flips a switch from dependence to extreme self-sufficiency.
Oh, yeah. Classic pivot.
He orders his teams to build a proprietary model totally from scratch. And by April 2026, merely a month after the Google restriction, Meta Superintelligence Labs unveils Muse Spark.
What's fascinating here is the total strategic pivot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Muse Spark deviates completely from Meta's previous playbook.
How so?
Well, Llama was open source, right?
Yeah.
Muse Spark is strictly proprietary, internal use only. The rationing incident basically forced Meta to realize that their infrastructure and their models are the actual lifeblood of their company.
Yeah.
Giving that away or relying on a competitor for it just became an unacceptable existential risk.
Yeah, you can't outsource your core engine. The technical specs on MuseSpark, though, those are what really capture my attention in this piece.
They are super impressive.
Because they were forced to build it to be hyper-efficient. They didn't have unlimited compute to train it or run it. It's a 45 billion parameter model, but they utilize an architecture called Mixture of Experts, or MOE.
Right.
I know we throw that term around a lot in these discussions, but how does that actually save compute in practice?
Okay, so think of it this way. In a traditional dense neural network, every single time you prompt it, the entire massive network fires up.
All the parameters.
Yes, all of them. Mm-hmm. All the parameters do the math to generate the answer every single time. It is computationally exhausting.
Right.
But the Mixture of Experts architecture divides the model into specialized subnetworks.
So out of the 45 billion parameters in MuseSpark, the piece says only about 8 billion are active for any given prompt.
Exactly. And that is the magic of the router network. The model receives your prompt, and this highly efficient routing layer analyzes it first.
Okay.
If you ask a coding question, the router basically ignores all the creative writing experts and the math experts, and it only activates the coding subnetwork.
Oh, that is so smart.
Right. So you get the intelligence of a massive model, but you only pay the compute cost of a tiny one.
And they layered that with a technique called thought compression, which I spent some time really thinking about.
Yeah, that's a cool concept.
The best way I can conceptualize it, drawing from the sources analogy, is taking a naturally brilliant, gifted student and forcing them to write a highly effective, punchy, one-page summary.
Instead of letting them ramble.
Exactly. Instead of letting them ramble on for a 10-page essay. The core insight, the actual quality of the thought, is exactly the same.
But the resources are totally different.
Right. The resources required to produce it and for the user to consume it are drastically reduced. MuseSpark was basically trained to think faster without losing accuracy.
And the results validate that approach entirely. I mean, MuseSpark boasts 10 times the compute efficiency of Llama 4, and it operates 3 times faster.
That is a huge leap.
It really is.
Yeah.
But the real victory was strategic. Despite being built under intense pressure as this, like, emergency patch for Google's failure, MuseSpark actually landed 4th globally on the Artificial Intelligence Index.
That's insane for a rushed project.
Yeah. It beat Claude Sonnet 4.6 and sat right behind the massive flagship models like GPT-5 and Gemini 3.
So basically, Google inadvertently forced Meta to become dangerously competent at building highly efficient proprietary AI.
It was a phenomenal backfire. Google's rationing was the ultimate catalyst for Meta's true independence.
It really was. But stepping back a bit, this opens up the real mystery of the tech in analysis. Because Google didn't cut Meta off out of spite, right? They cut them off because they had to. If a company that practically wrote the book on infinite data centers is rationing compute, the problem goes way beyond one contract.
Oh, entirely. The Google Meta saga was merely the canary in the coal mine. It laid bare this systemic shock that was just ripping through the entire global supply chain.
Yeah.
We are so accustomed to software being infinitely replicable. You know, you write code once, you deploy it a billion times.
Exactly. It's just copy and paste.
Right. But AI is different. AI requires physical mass. It requires silicon, metal, immense amounts of electricity, and water for cooling. The entire industry hit a physical bottleneck.
And the source attributes this crisis to a three-way monopoly. Let's dig into the mechanics of this, starting with NVIDIA. I think our audience is well aware that NVIDIA holds roughly 90% of the GPU market. We know their H100 chip is basically the engine of the AI boom, and the price on those spiked from $30,000 to $55,000.
With wait times stretching past 6 months, yeah.
Yeah, right. But NVIDIA's designs are just very expensive blueprints without someone to actually build them in the physical world.
Exactly. Which brings us to the second pillar of the monopoly, TSMC, the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company.
Right.
They're essentially the only foundry capable of manufacturing chips at the microscopic N3 and N4 nodes.
Okay.
But the actual choke point that nobody was paying enough attention to was TSMC's advanced packaging technology, specifically something called CoWoS.
Wait, CoWoS? I see CoWoS mentioned in almost every supply chain report, but what does it even stand for?
It stands for Chip on Wafer on Substrate.
Okay, got it. But why is packaging the specific bottleneck? Why can't we just print the chips and plug them into a motherboard like we used to do with regular computers?
Well, it comes down to a physics problem called the memory wall.
The memory wall.
Yeah. Modern AI processors can calculate data incredibly fast, but they starve if they can't get the data quickly enough from the memory chips.
So it's a traffic jam.
Basically, if you lay a processor and a memory chip flat on a traditional motherboard, the physical distance the electrical signals have to travel, even if it's just an inch, it creates unacceptable latency and generates massive heat.
Wait, really? The speed of light is literally too slow for that distance.
It genuinely is. When you are processing billions of parameters, an inch is a marathon.
Wow.
So CoWoS solves this by stacking the processor and the high-bandwidth memory chips incredibly close together on a single silicon interposer. It's like a microscopic 3D puzzle.
Okay, I see.
The data travel distance shrinks to microscopic levels, which eliminates the memory wall. But the manufacturing process to layer silicon on top of silicon with that level of precision, it is brutally difficult.
And TSMC just ran out of room to do it.
Exactly. Their capacity for CoWoS simply maxed out.
And TSMC can't just easily expand their capacity, right?
Yeah.
Because they are bound by the third part of the monopoly, ASML in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
They are the exclusive manufacturer of EUV extreme ultraviolet lithography machines. And when we say exclusive, it means nobody else on Earth can build what they build.
Nobody. These machines are arguably the most complex mechanical devices human beings have ever engineered.
I read about how they work, and it's just, it's mind-blowing.
It really is. To print circuits that are only a few atoms wide, ASML machines use these high-powered lasers to shoot microscopic drops of molten tin as they literally fall through a vacuum chamber.
In midair.
In midair. The laser vaporizes the tin, which generates a highly specific extreme ultraviolet wavelength of light.
That's insane.
And then that light is bounced off the flattest mirrors in the universe to print the blueprint onto the silicon wafer.
That is just mind-bending. And the brutal reality of the supply chain is that ASML can only build about 60 of these machines a year.
Yeah.
They cost upwards of $300 million each. And the industry demand was triple what they could produce.
At least triple.
So you have a bottleneck with ASML's machines, which is inside a bottleneck with TSMC's packaging, which is inside a bottleneck with NVIDIA's designs.
And capital alone cannot solve this. You know, you cannot just throw $20 billion at a new fabrication plant and expect to get chips next week.
Right.
A modern fab takes 3 to 5 years to become operational. The physical infrastructure just cannot scale as fast as the software demands it.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Because even if you magically secured the chips, the physical energy constraints are terrifying.
Oh, power grid issues, yeah?
The source points out that a single server rack of H100 GPUs consumes 100 kilowatts of electricity.
That's massive.
It is the equivalent of powering 100 average homes just for one rack. And these companies are trying to build data centers housing tens of thousands of these chips.
And if we connect this to the next generation of AI models like GPT-5, Gemini 3, these aren't just incremental software updates.
Mm.
The mathematical reality of scaling laws means these new models require 10 times the computational resources of the previous generation just to train.
10 times.
Yeah. Training a model like GPT-5 requires over 90,000 GPUs running concurrently for months. You are talking about hundreds of millions of dollars just in electricity and compute time.
That's if you can even get the power.
Exactly. Money can no longer buy capacity.
Yeah.
Because the local power grids and the physical data centers simply do not exist to support it.
And this physical reality inevitably created a digital graveyard of companies that just couldn't secure the hardware they needed.
Yeah, the fallout was brutal.
The source details some really harsh industry casualties. Anthropic, for instance, the makers of the Claude models. They were heavily anticipated to release Claude Opus 5 in the spring of 2026.
Right, they were a major player.
But they suffered a devastating 9-month delay. Their cloud provider, Amazon Web Services, simply failed to deliver the GPU capacity they had contractually promised.
Which is a death sentence. I mean, in the AI arms race, a 9-month delay is a lifetime.
Oh, absolutely.
It allowed every major competitor to surpass them while they were literally just stuck waiting in line for servers.
And then I remember when Midjourney had to downgrade, that was so visceral for the end users.
Oh, yeah, people were so mad.
In April 2026, Midjourney was forced to reduce their default image resolution from 2048 pixels down to 1536 pixels. The CEO essentially addressed the community and said, look, the computational costs are spiraling out of control.
They had no choice.
The only two options to keep the company alive were reducing the visual quality or raising subscription prices by 300%.
It really highlights the lethal unit economics of generative AI. I mean, every time a user generates an image, it costs the company a fraction of a cent in raw compute power.
Right, which adds up.
Exactly. If a user goes viral and generates thousands of images, the company actually loses money on that $20 monthly subscription.
Which leads directly to the collapse of Stability AI, the creators of Stable Diffusion. They are the ultimate cautionary tale of the cloud computing era here. They accumulated $96 million in cloud debt to Amazon and Google. Just debt. They were paying $8 million a month just to rent compute power, while their business model was only generating $4 million in revenue.
The math is just terminal.
It is. They hit a severe liquidity crisis and were sold to Cohere in a fire sale at a 70% discount.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we are basically witnessing the death of a very specific era of tech.
Yeah.
The AI as a service model is breaking down. For the last decade, the mantra for startups was always to avoid capital expenditures. You know, don't buy servers, just rent them dynamically from the cloud.
Right, keep it lean.
It was scalable. It was cheap. But when compute becomes a scarce physical commodity, the cloud providers are going to hoard it for their own internal projects.
Just like Google did to Meta.
Exactly. The era of renting your intelligence is over. The industry is verticalizing at breakneck speed. AI as infrastructure is the new reality. To survive, you must control your physical hardware stack.
And the survivors are adapting aggressively to that reality. Apple is quietly building out massive custom data centers strictly for Apple Intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon is funneling billions into their proprietary Trainium 2 chips to break their reliance on NVIDIA. OpenAI structured an exclusive agreement with Microsoft just to lock down 100,000 GPUs for themselves.
Right. And for any company that doesn't have $20 billion lying around to build a custom data center, the only survival tactic left is extreme software optimization.
Like what Meta did with MuseSpark.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The industry is shifting from bragging about how massive their models are to proving how small they can shrink them.
Right.
Things like quantization, pruning, architectures like mixture of experts, it's all about extracting maximum intelligence from minimal hardware. Efficiency is the new competitive moat.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? If your organization relies on external AI models, whether that's you know, tying into an API for customer service or running your backend on a cloud provider, you need to audit your operations immediately.
You really do.
What happens if your provider cuts your access by 65% tomorrow morning? You need to interrogate your contracts.
Look at the fine print.
Exactly. Do they guarantee hard compute capacity, or do they just promise best effort based on server availability? Because a $10 billion contract couldn't save Meta when the chips simply weren't there. If you don't have a localized, efficient plan B, your entire operation is exposed.
And, you know, that vulnerability extends far beyond corporate strategy.
Mm.
If we look at the geopolitical dimension of this crisis, it takes on a completely different weight.
Oh, for sure.
Corporations are fighting over APIs and server racks, but nations are fighting over silicon supply chains.
The geopolitics outlined in the source are absolutely fascinating. We had the United States pouring $52 billion into the Cheap Chip S Act, attempting to onshore advanced manufacturing to reduce their critical dependency on TSMC and Taiwan.
Right. And concurrently, the U.S. has implemented strict export bans, preventing the most advanced AI chips, specifically NVIDIA's high-end hardware, from being sold to China.
And looking purely at the technological fallout of those policies, the resulting behavior is incredibly intriguing. Chinese tech giants like Alibaba and ByteDance are completely starved of the premium hardware that American companies are currently hoarding.
They literally cannot get them.
Right. They physically cannot acquire the H100s at scale.
But necessity forces adaptation, right? Since these companies cannot rely on raw, brute force computational power, they're being forced to obsessively optimize their software architecture.
They have to do more with less.
Exactly. They're extracting unparalleled performance out of older, less advanced hardware generations. They are engineering massive distributed systems, linking hundreds of thousands of lower-tier chips together to train highly competitive models like Qwen 3.
Which leaves us with this incredible, provocative irony to ponder. Could these export restrictions actually backfire over a long enough timeline?
This is a huge question.
By starving a massive engineering workforce of premium hardware, are we inadvertently forcing them to develop such wildly efficient software optimization techniques that it actually creates a completely new kind of competitive advantage?
Right.
An advantage that will heavily persist even if hardware eventually becomes abundant again.
Constraints breed innovation. I mean, one side is learning to throw an infinite amount of power at the problem, while the other side is being trained to be fundamentally smarter with significantly less.
Yeah.
In a future where energy and efficiency are the ultimate bottlenecks, that software mastery could easily be the deciding factor.
It is a wild thought to leave you with. It all traces back to that jarring realization that the digital ethereal cloud is actually just a very hot, incredibly power-hungry machine sitting in a physical warehouse somewhere.
It's all physical in the end.
It really is. The next time you sign a contract for infinite scale, remember to check the plumbing before you move into the mansion. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the systems you rely on and keep exploring. We'll catch you next time.